Globally, there are over 370 million people with diabetes and over 1 billion people at risk of developing diabetes. So how do you combine research, treatment, and innovative patient education and engagement to curb a far-reaching epidemic? Hi, I'm Rod Pihowsky, Senior Director, Health Information Systems at HIMSS. Today we have John Brooks, the President and Chief Executive Officer of Joslin Diabetes Center, the only fully integrated research, treatment, education, and prevention center for diabetes in the United States. John, welcome.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be on the program.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, so let's get to it. How do you take all these strengths, you know, research, treatment, education, et cetera, of the Joslin Diabetes Center, how do you package all of that into something that patients and advocates can consume while focusing on changing the future landscape of diabetes?
Yeah, it's really a great question, and I think, in fact, it really does highlight, you know, our uniqueness. So let me just give one example maybe. So one of the things that we've been able to do is really observe, you know, what happens with the roughly 25,000 patients that we see here in Boston every year. And about 40% of that group are type 1 diabetics, people that have an autoimmune disease that basically precludes their pancreas from being able to produce insulin. But we noticed that, you know, we had a number of folks that were able to continue despite, you know, having been diagnosed with diabetes many years ago when insulin was first discovered. Obviously, it wasn't as refined as it is today. And yet, these people seem to do fairly well managing their diabetes. So we thought it would be appropriate to study them. And in fact, we've now turned that into a medalist program because we're following the example that Dr. Joslin put in place. We give people that have had type 1 diabetes for 50 years or more a medal. In fact, we just gave our first 80-year medal. But the point is, we were able to, through that observation in the clinic, bring that to the research area. And now we've found that there are protective proteins that seem to inhibit complications from developing. And in fact, very surprisingly, we have found that a lot of these patients, in fact, most of them are still producing insulin through beta cells that somehow have managed to evade or avoid the immune system. So that's an example where, you know, kind of tying clinic observations, bring it back to research, and then we turn around and see if we can come up with therapeutic proteins to inhibit complications. Can we figure out that mechanism that might lead us to understand how to change the autoimmune process to ultimately find a cure for diabetes? So, again, I think it's great that we can kind of tie everything together. And while we're working on, you know, the long-term solutions, you know, we're actually developing what we think are, you know, real differential capabilities that we could share with not only our patients, but share with our affiliates across the country, collaborators, and we think that's a great way to really leverage our capabilities.
So what does the future landscape of diabetes look like? Will it ever go away?
Well, you know, I think ultimately our objective is to find a cure, you know, but we understand, as it turns out, diabetes is a very complicated disease. And certainly, as I said, there's type 1 diabetics that I described. We also have really a global pandemic, as you mentioned, with the number of people with diabetes and a risk of diabetes. You know, type 2 diabetics, where we have issues around genetic risk factors being affected by diet, exercise, or lack thereof. We're starting to learn a lot about what's called the microbiome, the gut bacteria that live within all of us that affects how we digest foods, how the gut and the brain communicate. So I think the answer is, you know, that's what we do here. We're looking for real permanent cures and solutions. But in the interim, you know, how do we help people with diabetes live with that disease, take a lot of the burden of having to understand the complexities and challenges of diabetes, and hopefully we can use, you know, tools such as, you know, mobile phones, big data analytics. I mean, lots of ways that we want to be able to help people, you know, at a one-on-one basis, at a patient, you know, panel level, at an institutional level, and frankly, at a population health level. You know, it's all similar. You know, how do we take our expertise, use a little bit of creativity, be the catalyst for change, and then find others across the country and across the globe that, you know, together we can try to drive some real solutions where they're needed.
And with the growth of information technology coming about, we're really at the beginning stages of being able to capture all the kind of data that you need to do that.
Well, it's a great point, you know, and one of the things that we're excited about is we see, you know, more and more EHR systems obviously proliferating, certainly the elements of meaningful use and some of the stimulus money that was put in place. You know, as we see all of these different capabilities exist, you know, there's still a problem with a lot of these electronic medical record or electronic health record systems being repositories for a wealth of information. But, you know, the real opportunity is, can we start harvesting, if you will, all these data elements and turn them into actionable, intelligible information that, in fact, patients and their families and their care providers can use. So we think there's some real opportunities in risk stratifying patients. There's real opportunities to create teachable moments for patients as they better understand how foods affect their glucose levels, help them do a better job of taking their medications, the whole adherence compliance area. And again, I think the point you're making is really we can do that with leveraging, if you will, the power of mobile capabilities, connectivity, analytics. Really, you know, the whole healthcare information revolution is now at a point where, you know, it could really help translate into meaningful solutions. And in the new era of healthcare reform, healthcare economics, you know, I think we have a great opportunity to show that these solutions not only make an impact, but they're cost effective and will lead to taking costs out of the equation going forward.
We talk a lot about innovation at HIMSS and in the innovation community, and you've said in the past that Joslin Diabetes Center operates like a 115-year-old startup. What makes it like a startup, and how do you maintain that presence over time, and how does that work with the concept of innovation?
Yeah, so it is a great way for us to, I think, have a culture that supports experimentation and trying things and not being afraid of failure. And I kind of have the opportunity here to really leverage the fact that Dr. Joslin, 115 years ago, you know, was certainly a pioneering spirit. You know, even when insulin was first discovered in 1922, you know, he was astute enough to recognize that insulin by itself wasn't going to work unless there was clear focus paid on exercise and diet. So I get to leverage, if you will, kind of that pioneering spirit. You know, I'm happy to tell our team it's really part of our DNA, which means I think we really do, you know, kind of have this, if you will, legacy mandate to try new ideas, to think out of the box, to try to bring new opportunities and really use Boston as kind of our test kitchen for let's see if we can try them out. Let's see if we can show that they work. If they don't work, what do we learn from the process? And I think, you know, creating an environment where, you know, no one's going to be fired for failing. Failing is how we learn. You know, we're happy to do pilots, you know, because that's another way to kind of break the old chicken and egg cycle where someone says, well, you know, that's interesting, but, you know, how do you get paid or how do you show it works? You know, our feeling is the only way you're going to advance, if you will, the ball down the field is if you start doing it. So I think we have that, if you will, kind of legacy that was started a long time ago by our founder, and I think we use it to kind of drive the fact that, you know, that's who we are, that's what the world, I think, expects us to be, and let's use it together with a lot of great collaborations and partnerships to see if we can make a real difference in what clearly is a huge problem that people want real solutions around.
You're based in Boston, but you work on a national level. How does that work regionally in other parts of the country? How are you fitting in nationally?
Yeah, so in fact, you know, I'd even add to that not only nationally, but in some ways globally. So we have, you know, a lot of relationships here in Boston. You know, we have a program we call Jocelyn Inside, where how do we take our expertise and find ways we can share it or embed it into other institutions? So one of the other Boston hospitals, we're providing their inpatient diabetes capabilities to help their, you know, inpatient population avoid readmittances, reduce the amount of hospital-acquired infections, which, as we know today, those two items aren't no longer being reimbursed, if you will. And then as we look across the country, we've always had an affiliate model for many years where we were able to provide other institutions our expertise, our branding, all of our protocols. But now we're quite excited about really trying to get them connected to be a network, and we can bring, you know, more capabilities. We can hopefully provide capabilities for teleconsults or, you know, one click away expert advice. We're hoping we'll be able to work with them to really look at their electronic medical records and start risk stratifying patient populations to see, you know, where are their outliers or where are some of the practitioners perhaps needing some new training or education because they're not following, you know, best practices or evidence-based medicine. We think there's opportunities to, you know, make sure we're doing a better job given the fact that most people with diabetes see their doctors four times a year. It just doesn't make sense to think for the 90 days between visits that, you know, they're going to do a good job all by themselves managing their disease. So why can't we really leverage the power of, you know, all of these cloud-based capabilities? If we see trending, you know, why not help that patient make mid-course corrections, you know, take further advantage of all these new patient portals that are coming about? So I think there's opportunities really leveraging, you know, connectivity, mobility, analytics, and, you know, communication tools and all, you know, and we think that's really where, again, we can prove, you know, things that we've done here in Boston. We could then translate them and adopt them so they work in other parts of the country and ultimately in other parts of the world.
Can you think of any surprises, any best practices that have evolved where you never thought they would exist before, now that you have more data and you've got broader partnerships and access to more populations? What's been discovered that was kind of surprising that has turned out to be a big advancement in the treatment of diabetes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the real, you know, key, and maybe it shouldn't be a surprise, but, you know, one of the things that's been interesting in working with a lot of primary care doctors, you know, they're very busy people. They're under a lot of pressure. They have a lot of patients in their panels. And one of the things that we've realized is that, you know, there's a lot of those doctors that, you know, normally someone presents with type 2 diabetes. They put them on a drug called metformin, and as their diabetes advances, you know, they're also going to probably need to look at, you know, putting them on some additional medications, keeping an eye on their lipids, you know, their cholesterol and their blood pressure. But, you know, one of the things that we know is a lot of those patients really need to be on insulin, you know, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of primary care doctors say, well, I know that, but boy, I don't have the resources, I don't have the nurse educators to train them and try to make sure I can get them on, you know, insulin. And frankly, a lot of patients themselves, you know, tend to think, boy, if I have to go on insulin, it means I'm really, really in bad shape. You know, this isn't a good sign. And, you know, they're reluctant to go on insulin when, in fact, you know, insulin is what their body's already producing, just not enough of it. So, you know, I think the real insights is how do we really, you know, provide, if you will, tools. And we have an opportunity, you know, using, again, whether they're tablets, mobile apps, you know, we can bring diabetes education capabilities to primary care doctors so literally they can kind of hand to their patient, dedicated app that's going to show them, why insulin is important, how to administer, how to draw it up, or how to use a pump. And I think, the primary care doctors will, like the fact that it's leveraging, their time. They don't have to worry about it. They know it's going to be done correctly. And, the patients themselves can, get the family involved. They can keep reviewing it over and over again and frankly understand that this is something that's actually a positive as opposed to a negative. So I think not necessarily a surprise, but I think kind of eye-opening where, we can really bring, kind of almost like a diabetes nurse educator, instead of the patient physically having to come here, we can kind of virtually bring that person, if you will, and that expertise to them, on the other side of, kind of a touchscreen, so to speak.
Discoveries and insights are one thing, so how do you turn that into something that makes a difference? How do you help people with diabetes live well and prevent further complications? Are there obstacles faced by companies working on drug and device development, and what are you doing in that area?
Yeah, so we've done a number of things, to make sure that not only for our faculty and clinicians and researchers and scientists here, how do we make sure that the great things they're working on ultimately translate and get in the hands of patients? So we've created an Office of Commercialization and Ventures to really help coordinate and guide with business people at the helm so that we can really help nurture, relationships with either funders or startup companies or pharmaceutical companies or device companies or healthcare IT companies. We want to make sure that we have a wealth of knowledge here, and let's make sure that we help translate what we're doing in the hands of people that can ultimately help get it through the regulatory cycles and commercialization. At the same time, we want to make sure that, all the different capabilities we have here, get leveraged and used as much as possible, again, with the idea of helping to make sure that new discoveries or new apps or new clinical care pathways, anything that we think is relevant. And one of the things we did coupled with that, we wanted to make sure that not only do we continue to do a good job taking care of people that have diabetes so that they do, in fact, live well, we recognize that, how do we put more focus around food, nutrition, healthy habits? So we have a new demonstration kitchen that we're going to be developing so we can not only show our patients, but we can broadcast, in some ways our version of the food network, giving people better understanding about which foods are problematic, which foods tend to cause spikes in their blood glucose levels, what are the things they can do to think about portion sizes or ingredient or nutritional changes. Exercise, we have a gymnasium here at Joslin. Again, it's great for patients that happen to be here in Boston, but how do we use the power of, if you will, broadcasting and YouTubing and, ways we can really put on programs that are then distributable across the world. We can culturally translate them so that, people that perhaps have diabetes, they have some complications, they haven't been able to exercise. Nonetheless, can we give them some ideas about, stretching or a little bit of conditioning, knowing that those simple little things can make a big difference in the management of their diabetes and helping avoid complications. So I think our plan here is to really try to be, sensitive to the fact that, we just don't want to be, kind of delivering solutions for people that happen to come here. But, how do we think about virtualization? How do we collaborate with others? We have this concept called collaboratories where we're happy to pilot and experiment with others. But it's all based on the fact that, let's make sure that, we're developing real solutions that have real impact, that work across a whole mix of patients and ethnic groups and cultural groups. And at the same time, we want to make sure they're, pragmatic, they're understandable, they're impactful, and we're putting a lot of metrics and capabilities around them, quality measures, outcomes, so that we can show not only are they making a difference for that person, for the clinical system, but are we helping to take costs and inefficiencies out of the equation?
Perfect segue. Cost. We don't always talk about the financial sustainability or the business case of innovation in healthcare. So how do you go about commercializing your research and expertise and balancing that against wanting to stay true to the organization's philanthropic mission?
Yeah, it's a great question, you know, and frankly, we very much have a mission. You know, our mission is to, you know, basically cure, treat, and prevent diabetes, and that's what drives us. So the key is, you know, we want to make sure that as we partner and collaborate with others that, you know, they understand that we are mission-driven. You know, we certainly need some economics to make sure we keep this great engine running. You know, we get a lot of our support historically, you know, in research from the National Institute of Health, some from foundations, some from very grateful donors and patients. But, you know, we also know that, you know, we need some economics by, you know, being able to commercialize, you know, with the right partners, ideas we have or solutions that we've identified or new drugs or therapies that have made a difference. And, you know, Jocelyn was one of the pioneers in helping people with diabetes avoid, you know, going blind. So we know how to do it. So I think the real key is we, you know, make sure that we have very clear alignment with our collaborators around, you know, what it is we're doing. We want to make sure that, you know, money doesn't get ahead of our mission. And, you know, I think the important thing is, you know, we want to make sure that we continue to really be patient-focused. At the end of the day, you know, this is all about patients. We want to make sure that what we're doing remembers that, you know, this is for them. You know, we have to make sure that these are solutions that are going to be helpful. We're advancing, if you will, the state of the art. And, you know, I think the important thing is to make sure that we put in good checks and balances. That doesn't mean we're slow, doesn't mean we're not able to be nimble, but it says that, you know, we want to be thoughtful, and we are also very, you know, focused on making sure that we do, you know, using metrics, using studies, using validation. You know, at the end of the day, we want to be able to show that what we're doing and what we're collaborating on does, in fact, make a difference. And, you know, obviously, you know, helping patients, as we said, you know, live well with their chronic disease. And, you know, at some point in time, we'll be able to basically hopefully stem the tide in type 2 diabetes and ultimately provide a real cure for people with type 1 diabetes.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I have one more question for you. What's
sure.
the top barrier to innovation in healthcare relating to diabetes?
Yeah, I'd say the real top barrier is, you know, sometimes, you know, unintended consequences. So, you know, I think it's interesting as we think about great opportunities to leverage, let's say, telehealth, you know, we know that if we can connect to people in their homes, we know if we can kind of reach across state lines and bring expertise where it's needed. But, you know, I think many of your listeners will probably know that there's some real constraints around delivering healthcare across state lines and using telehealth. So whether that's the most important one, but I think it's just an example where, you know, I think across the country and federally, we have to look at, you know, where technology is bringing new solutions, but we need to make sure that our regulatory processes or our laws are keeping up with, you know, what we need to do, so we're not trying to drive innovation and in some way stifling it with the other hand.
Thank you. And with that, we are out of time. Today, our guest has been John Brooks, President and Chief Executive Officer of Jocelyn Diabetes Center. Thank you, John, so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it myself.
For more great podcasts, check out hims.org/podcasts.